Barhill Records. Der Talk.
Hallo, hier ist Barhill Records, der Talk. Ich stelle in jeder Folge MusikerInnen bzw. Bands vor, die entweder bei meinem Label Barhill Records unter Vertrag stehen oder mit denen ich in meiner Funktion als Musikjournalist gesprochen habe. Zu Gast in Folge 22 von Barhill Records, der Talk, ist der Rock'n'Roller Corey Clark. Nachdem er zuvor solo aufgetreten war, gründete er im Jahr 1987 in seiner damaligen Wahlheimat New York die Band Warrior Soul. Die Hard Rock'n'Roller sorgten Anfang der 90er mit ihren ersten drei Alben für großes Aufsehen. Manche bezeichnen sie gar als legendär. Unter anderem wegen Clarks poetischer Texte und seiner einzigartigen Stimme. Aber Clark ist mittlerweile auch bildender Künstler. Darüber und über noch viel mehr sprach ich mit dem charismatischen Sänger. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß mit dem folgenden Interview.
So, Corey, my first question is, as far as I know, you're recording new music these days. Is there a new Warrior Soul album in the pipeline, or what are you recording right now?
Yeah, I'm a new album right now. And, you know, it's been to fits and starts, really. You know, I've been poking around at it for a couple of years now. But now it's gonna be out for, it looks like, April.
Okay.
That's what I'm shooting for anyway. There's no reason why it shouldn't be done by then. You know, I'd really have to be stupid if I didn't, you know, finish it. But it's really good. It's going to be called Rock 'em Sock 'em. And it's got some aggression. It's a Warrior Soul record. It's got all the Warrior Soul things.
Corey, where have you been born? Where did you grow up? And where do you live now?
I'll say I was born in Detroit. I lived there till sort of early 80s, mid 80s. I moved to New York City, and that's where I really grew up. Then I lived in Los Angeles, then New York again, then London, Stockholm, Berlin, you know, all over. But I live in Florida right now.
And where do you feel at home?
Mainly Earth.
Okay. That's a good
one.
So your soul is not attached to a special place.
It's attached to special people.
Okay.
I feel at home when I'm with my friends, and I've got them all over the place, and especially the friend I have now here it's a nice thing to have.
Mm. When you look back on your career, on your musical projects, what are you the most proud of? I mean, you've done a lot. You have achieved a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, Space Age Playboys, obviously. Game Changer. Destroy the War Machine, of course. I mean, all the records to me, I wouldn't put them out if I didn't think there were something about them, you know. But I say probably Space Age, Chill Pill, and the first album, probably the main things.
Hmm. You said when you were living in New York, you really grew up. So which bands and musician did inspire you as a kid to pick up an instrument and perform music?
I don't know, everybody. Detroit radio was really major. We had three P1 stations, eventually four P1 stations by the end of the 70s. And we would just rush home from elementary school, and somebody's parents across the street or whatever, you know, wouldn't be there. So we'd all hang out there and listen to the radio. And wait for the favorite songs. And, you know, there was the year that Smoke on the Water came out. And we're like running home to hear Smoke on the Water over and over again. And because you could change the three stations and they'd all be playing it at a different time. So you could keep hearing the same song. Everyone go crazy. And the next crazy one was American Band from Grand Funk Railroad, right? and they were a Michigan band, so we were all really crazy about it. And then I remember walking home fifth grade, and by then we had transistor radios, and School's Out for Summer came on at the end of the year, and we went bananas for that. We went crazy. And so, you know, that's all going on. And then I moved to Livonia, which is a little bit 5 miles away from Rapid Township, which is the edge of Detroit. And this thing came on the radio 2 years later. And we just went mental. I jumped on my bike, rode to the park where everyone's smoking weed. Everyone's got their radios on. And it's like, I want to rock and roll all night. We're like, oh, this is the greatest song ever written by human beings. We went completely bonkers for it. You know, so that led into all that Kiss thing and Aerosmith and other, you know, it just, music was just the most important thing in the world back then.
And you've started your career as a drummer for bands in Michigan and Pennsylvania. Then you moved to New York City and became a frontman as a solo artist or a one-man band, so to say, and then within a band. So how come, when did you feel the courage to take the lead?
Well, if you see me play drums, you can see where I might be a little bit inhibited being back there. So I was singing and playing drums in my last Detroit band called The Trial. And I finally got a drummer and I just moved up front. And I was a pretty proficient drummer and well-known in Detroit. So people didn't want to see me up front singing. So I said, all right, well, some things happened in my life that I kind of had to leave Detroit. So when I went to New York, I said, fuck, I'm sick. Rock and roll bands, it's such an antiquated sort of way to do it. So I decided to just sing against backing tracks, play percussion. And it was a much more artistic, kind of groovy kind of scene in New York. And I started to take off. And then my show became so extreme. It was like really scary. And one of the promoters at one of the clubs said, you know, Corey, you got to get a band, man. And I was like, I was tired of hearing it. So I said, okay, I'll get a band. So I started a band with the same name as my performance art, which was Warrior Soul. And I just started Warrior Soul as a band. So, you know, I still did poetry with the band. It was, you know, I'm very influenced by Morrison, obviously, and that whole stage approach. And Johnny Rotten, very much so. Those guys are my two main guys.
Well, yeah,
and Iggy Pop.
Iggy Pop, you said? Okay.
Yeah, Iggy was an influence too. Any sort of dynamic front man I was interested in being like.
Warrior Soul was one of my favorite bands back then, and you've got signed to Geffen Records quite away, as far as I know. So how did that come about? What did they see in you? Have any idea?
Have no idea. Why would they want me? I mean, I make good records. I'm halfway decent looking. I've got hair and teeth.
Attitude.
You know, I can sing pretty good. You know, I can talk up a storm. Front men don't grow on trees. And I think that's what they saw in me.
Back then, you've released, in my opinion, three legendary albums, the first three in 3 years. The next 2 years, two more records followed. From today's perspective, the amount of output seemed to be insane. But that was how it was back then. And touring, recording. How was it for you back then? Was it, did you?
Heaven. I mean, that was heaven. You know, I got to rehearse every day during the week, right? And just, you know, rehearse for 4 hours, go to the bar, then, you know, hang out, do whatever you do. And then next morning, you're out there 11 o'clock, 11 till 3 or 4. hit happy hour, you're gone. And then get on the road, and then go in the studio, big studios, record really big studios, go out on the road, you know, go nuts. So it was really, really good.
Hmm. So you didn't feel any pressure? It felt natural?
Well, there was always pressure. I was on the phone 24 hours a day, screaming about promotions and this and that, and doing interviews and stuff like that. But I mean, I put more pressure on myself than I think anybody else did.
There was a coming and going in the history of Warrior Soul. Why wasn't it? I don't mean this in a negative way. So, but why wasn't it possible to keep a steady lineup for quite some time?
I had the original guys, and I wanted, you know, I honestly wanted to have make it a band and not to be like, just like me with other guys. You know, I didn't want to be John Bon Jovi. And it was, you know, I wanted it to be like a band. You know, like so. That was the vibe back then. But I don't know. Rico, me and him just didn't get along really. And then Mark just kind of dissolved. He just kind of decided he liked to do drugs more than he liked to play. And then Pete decided he wanted to just go off. So that was just me, really, the original member again. So back to the thing. So I just said, fuck it, I'll go solo for a little bit. And then I put the band back together. And I've got a steady lineup, to be quite honest. But there's just more guys in that lineup. And I can pick and choose. I've been using the same guys for over 10 years, 15 years now.
Some weeks ago, you've posted a picture of some old Warrior Soul recording tapes on Instagram or Facebook. I can't remember. Were you surprised what you found on them, and what are you going to do with the unreleased material?
We're still, I'm mixing them still. Parker Barrow, Gigi, my guitar player, is mixing them right now in Italy. And I don't know. He keeps surprising me. There's always something I forgot about or whatever. But we're going to put it on an album. We're going to release it. It's you know, probably be a double album. It's the songs, you know, it was stuff that didn't really fit or was not right, you know. But it's recorded pretty good. It's all analog, reel to reel. And, you know, it's going to be a cool little record. But, you know, I'm concentrating on Rock'em Sock'em right now. And the, we're re-releasing Drugs Gone the New Republic for our tour in January in vinyl. So that's with an extra track, 24 hours by Joy Division from that time period. So, that's going to be with us. It's going to be our record to sell while we're on the road there. We'll have other records though too, but that's going to be the main push.
So you do own your the rights of all the Warrior Soul songs nowadays?
Always.
Always. That's very smart.
Yeah. I was pretty lucky on that one.
Yeah. You're regularly on tour with a new formation of Warrior Soul, new compared to the very first lineup. How does it feel to play these songs that are 35 years old? Can you still relate to the Corey Clark of the late 80s and 90s?
A lot of those songs mean more now than they did then. It's surprising when you play a song like Wasteland, Downtown, Jump for Joy, I See the Ruins, Blown Away. All those songs are, you can, The Party, all of those songs could be released today, and they would be just as relevant. So yeah, I enjoyed it. What's nice is Warrior Soul has got a deep catalog, and I also can draw from my solo records and from other bands that I've been in to mix things up and keep it fresh.
You've released quite a lot of songs and quite some political songs. I guess these dark times we are in right now, especially the situation in the USA, should be the ideal breeding ground for new angry lyrics for you. Am I right?
Oh, sure. Why not? Oh, I've got some. The new album's got it. I've got a thing about AI. I've got a song about real estate. I've got a song about, it's a song. There's a place in California. It used to be an old Air Force base, Army base. And people have just moved in there. They call it Slab City. And nobody pays rent or anything. And it's just this crazy, huge place where people live for free. And so I wrote a song called Slab City. It's about real estate. But I got, I can't remember. I got all kinds of stuff on this new record. It's going to be cool.
For 5 years, you were also the singer of the legendary doom metal band Trouble. How did you get this job? I guess it wasn't an obvious choice. Not that you're not able to sing these songs, but who would have thought that you would fit into Trouble back then?
Well, the guy who runs Trouble, Rick Wartell, saw me play with Dirty Rig in New York, and he called me up and he goes, "You want to sing for Trouble?" And I said, "Well, if I can sing it my way and breathe some more life into it." I go, "I'm not going to stand at the mic. I'm going to move around." And he goes, "That's what I want." He goes, "I don't want to just do the same thing." And I go, "Well, okay, I'll go do it." And it was fun. I enjoyed singing with them. They had a few fans that were diehards that didn't like me, you know, but that's kind of why I got tossed out of there. But I was living in Malta at the time, and they were in Chicago, so kind of whatever.
What many might not know is you're not only a musician, singer, and songwriter, but also a visual artist. You paint pictures. So when did you start with that? And are there things you can express with paintings other than with music?
Well, music is, a lot of it's a performance, isn't it, really? I mean, unless writing and recording isn't really, but painting, you're able to, I don't know, my paintings are abstractly decorative and aggressive. And it's just like, I like my style, so I can put them up on my house. And then I started selling them. But it's, I've always painted, and I always wanted to do that more directly. And not just painting, but do like sculpture and stuff like that. I like to make stuff, you know, but there have been times when painting saved my ass, and I was, you know, out of beer money, and I needed rent money or whatever, and I would sell a couple paintings, and that would help me out. But I don't worry about that now so much. But I've done quite a few paintings, probably over 400 or 500.
So I guess you don't like to sit around a lot. You like?
Oh no! Don't get me wrong. I love sitting around.
Okay, good.
Ask my girlfriend, especially at the bar.
Record sales are low nowadays, and everybody uses streaming. Touring is expensive. So how difficult is it for you to make a living out of the music business? And is your visual art a more profitable segment?
It goes up and down. I mean, in the last 2 years or 3 years, the music's been making more money. Mm-hmm. So that's been great. But I've done three sort of art shows, real art shows. And they don't, well, but I, they, you just don't see that happening that much anymore right now. But I'm not really pushing my paintings right now. I'm kind of just concentrating on music. And I'm supposed to be writing a book, but it's a pain in the ass. Mm.
So do you use your own music when you have an art show?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like it. I've had success doing, you know, not just me in the show, but collaborating with other artists. And if they have music, then we could combine it all together.
My last question. At the beginning, I asked you what you're the most proud of, but is there a lot you regret?
Not really. I've got a convertible. I live in Florida. I got a hot girlfriend. I'm on tour a lot. I still have bodily fluids and functions, which I'm grateful for. And no, I don't really regret much.
I've never met you back in the days, but I always imagined you as you are right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just, well, that's just me.
That's how you are.
That's cool.
That's very
cool. Are you going to come to the show?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, great, great. All right. Well, we'll party down when we get there.
Of course, we will. Corey, I thank you a lot for having time doing this interview. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I wish you all the best and hope to see you in
January. Thank you for enjoying my art. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Das war Bahe Records, der Talk mit Corey Clark von Warrior Soul. Den Link zu seiner Band und den zu meinem Label Bahe Records findet ihr in den Shownotes. Das war's für heute. Abonniert den Talk, folgt dem Talk und empfiehlt ihn gerne weiter. Danke und bis bald.
Bahe Records. Der Talk.